Great leaders can encourage us to reach new heights and achieve more than we ever thought possible. But what makes a great leader? And why pursue a leadership role in the first place? Welcome to the VMUG Inspirational Leadership Podcast, where we share the stories of leaders at all levels who desire to inspire those under their care.
Hi, everyone. My name is Michael Fleischer, and I'm a Senior Staff Solution Engineer with VMware.
My name is Nick Cordy. I am a Staff Solution Engineer at VMware. And today on the Inspirational Leadership Podcast, our guest is Usain Dursun. Usain, could you give us a little bit of background on who you are, what you do today, and a brief summary of how you got there?
So first of all, thanks for having me. I'm Usain Dursun. I've been with VMware a little over 8 years, and I'm running an organization called VMware Platform Services. It is a group serving as a central engineering function, providing tools, capabilities, frameworks, infrastructure, and a platform, whatever every engineer at Microsoft needs. That's what my team is doing. As background, I'm an engineer myself. I did study math and computer science. I have a master's degree, and I'm a PhD dropout. So maybe one day I will go back and complete that. And before coming to VMware, I spent a year at Oracle Public Cloud, and before that, about 16 years at Microsoft in many versions of Windows. And lastly, in the last three and a half years, I was in the early Azure team. So I experienced from the very first hand the transition from on-prem to cloud. Was quite painful, and part of my role is to make sure that not everybody goes that pain.
That is incredible. That's an awesome story. I appreciate that. All right. So part of our format here is to ask our guest three very specific questions to begin. So I'll get started here. So to you, what is the difference between a manager and a leader?
I started like anybody else, as a manager, and I had a manager role when I was in Turkey before I was hired by Microsoft from Turkey. So I moved from Ankara to Seattle. It was such a big change. And I was a manager at that time, and I was still trying to learn what it means to be a manager. And I was working for Siemens, the German company. When I came to Microsoft, I went back to my roots, and I started as an IC, individual contributor. And it took me another 2.5-3 years to go back to management track. And in these two experiences, both experiences, what management for me was, it's all about execution. So you have like short-term goals, you have resources, you have the company's established processes, and everything is given to you. And within that, given the project duration, you have to accomplish a goal with the people who are in your team. So you do have to, the way I learned management is you cannot disassociate yourself from the actual work itself. So what that means is there was always this element of like being a manager means half time you are an IC, you are an engineer as well. So it is pretty much about there is something that needs to be achieved. You have a timeline, or you come up with a timeline with your team. You have to make sure that give it the resources, you hit that timeline and you deliver. So management is sharply focused on execution and pretty much like shorter or relatively shorter term goals. When I grew up in the ranks and when I started to realize the broader picture, it became obvious that there is more to it. And is when you are an engineer or when you are like a first line manager, when you see like higher up people, especially executives, you usually question their decisions and you just say like, how come they don't see such trivial things? And you always think that like they're not seeing like, or they're not that much attached to like actually what's going on in the field. So, but later on you realize that actually optics are very different. So when you shift the leadership, the optics are much more strategic and much more longer term. And you have to think about longer term goal of the organization, the health of the organization. So one thing I learned is organizational health is the most important thing. So I don't want to go back to cliche stuff. Like my pet peeve is to fight with the cliches, but I sometimes use them. You all know the culture eats strategy for breakfast by Peter Drucker. So my view is like, yes, I agree with that. But on top of that, there is more to that. Like when you talk about culture, there is an element about organizational health. As a leader, you have to be very mindful about the overall health of the organization and the vision, and if the team is set up or staged to reach to that long-term vision. So it requires like a lot of detailed thinking. And because of that, some of the things you do as a leader may not look that necessary or may not look that right to some of your engineers. So the other element of leadership at that point is to stay close to your people. So one thing that I still pay attention as considering myself as a leader is to make sure that the degree of separation with everybody in your team never goes over two. So if you have a deep organization and if you have like 5-6 level down, and if you don't have the direct connection with the manager of the individuals, it's gonna be really hard to get the right pulse. So my view is like, you have to get together with those people at certain frequencies so that you get that whole pulse, because we talked about health, pulse, you see the whole analogy. So like, this is a living organism. And as a leader, you have to make sure that your organization is healthy and promising for the future.
Oh, I like that. Thinking about the overall organization's health and the health of the people down below. Love it.
Exactly.
Those are some of the things that great leaders certainly have to think about. What would you say would be other qualities that a great leader should possess to be in a role like that?
Not just for leaders, actually every human being. So I have two kids, I have two sons. And for those of you who have kids, or for those of you who have like nieces and nephews, you don't need to be like a father. If you see like younger people or like people in early time of their life, we tell them so many things. And one thing I realized is like, I tell them so much things and probably they're thinking that, how are we going to do all these things that our dad is telling us? And what I did is, maybe I'm using too much of like the verb muscle. I told them, you know what? I'm going to simplify this. I'm going to make sure that like, I'm not telling like a lot of stuff. And I will just tell you a few things. And this is something I've done like about 10 plus years ago. My younger one is 14. And I told them that number one, know yourself, self-awareness. Whatever you do, whatever your job is, if that is missing, you are going to have a hard time in many things. Especially if you are a leader, you will be in deep trouble. So that is like a must have. So these are not necessarily applicable, but in case you want to know like what else I tell my kids, like the other one is, don't eat too much junk, because your body is a temple, so you have to treat it nicely. And also the other one is, think about greater good and don't take advantage of the situation. So that is also like, the last one is also applicable to leadership. But going back to the core of the question, other than knowing yourself, that self-awareness is such a critical thing, and gets even better when it's combined with like high degree of empathy. Empathy is another like almost overly used phrase these days. And a lot of people define it as simple as like putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, but actually it's well beyond that. It's not as simple as just like thinking about that. It's a very broader thing, and you have to look at things in an optic that you should look at that person and see what else is there behind that facade. And to be able to do that, you have to have the relationship, and you have to make sure that you connect with those people so that they freely talk to you about like what is going on in their lives and what they are up to. If you don't have like empathy combined with like self-awareness, you are going to have a hard time. And I suggest like really seriously considering like staying as a leader. The other thing is being a lifelong learner. So this is extremely critical. So, and the lifelong learning is something that I learned later in my life, especially like after coming to US. When I was at Microsoft in the early days, I was all about thinking that if I have time, I cannot use that time for anything other than learning something about technology. I need to get the next COM book or next like .NET book or like Windows internals and all. Because I was thinking that if I use that time for reading something else, I will be falling behind. That was me as an engineer. As a manager and a leader, I actually owe some of it to one of some of my early managers at Microsoft, the habit of reading. That habit, like even though I had the habit for technical stuff, I learned that that's good, but not good enough. It was like, again, like early 2000s, when I started to take reading and non-technical reading seriously. And what I learned is, like, I like this, the way it rhymes, like the leaders are the readers. So it's a good rhyme and it's a good statement, actually. The other thing that I learned is, again, this is like during my career, and now like I actually compile them and I always use them like on a day-to-day basis. Reading is also something that's critical to be combined with writing. So I was one of those guys in the high school finding it totally unnecessary and useless to write composition for a given prompt. So because I was into math and I was into like non-social stuff, and I was thinking that that's something that I should be proud of. And when we were taking the literacy class, of course, I was in Turkey and it was Turkish literacy, and we were given a prompt and asked to write a composition. I always hated it. There was a small percentage of people in the class. They used to write like very vivid, expressive stuff. And I said, what is this? Why are people like doing this type of stuff? What is the value? And my grades were not that great in literacy and the social sciences. And I said, you know what? I'm going to pay a little bit closer attention to see if I'm going to improve my grade. And I realized that this is not that difficult. And I gave it a try. And I realized that I actually kind of like it. Apparently, I was not liking it because of social and peer pressure. It was not really my feeling until I found out, just because increasing my grade, that I actually may have the skills I need to write. With that, like since then, like this was like 11th grade, I believe, I'm in love with writing. I'm not saying I'm a great writer or anything. I have no such a claim, but I try to get better writer like every day. Like I can tell you that. Right before COVID, I have taken classes from continuing education at Stanford in creative writing and how to express yourself, all that kind of stuff. So if I summarize the whole thing, it's all about knowing yourself and a high degree of empathy combined with like being a great reader and a writer. If you have these, you can make a decent leader.
That was an incredible answer. I love that you're a lifelong learner. I could not agree with that anymore. And I'm very much on that path of when I'm reading it, it's technical. I a couple of years ago, I did shift to the, hey, I should probably read something else. But yeah, I just continually dove into, all right, what's the nerdiest thing I can read? Let's read that right now. So you gave some great advice earlier, and I love the keeping the pulse of the community thought process, right? So getting down to the IC and understanding what's going on at their level to understand what's going on in the org to keep things healthy. So along those lines, what advice do you have for others that are looking to pursue leadership and or how they can determine if it's right for them?
So this is an interesting topic that always comes up. And sometimes like during one-on-ones, like especially the skip level ones, like for those like individual contributors, there is this perception that maybe like it's a global perception. It's not only something I've seen in the US. The thinking is like, you need to be like more outgoing, maybe like more of like an extrovert, and you need to have like a high degree of connection with a lot of people, and you should be always up and around on the stage in front of a lot of people, and if you have this, you should be a leader. And I was one of those people. I was always thinking that way, actually, in my time at Microsoft as well. So I thought that I should stay as an IC, like I should not bother because I'm not going to be able to do any of these things. Because I'm an introvert. Many people still don't understand how that is, but like I know I'm an introvert and by heart. So, and I try to deal with that every day, like even in this exercise itself as well. On top of that, like I'm not like a always like looking for like big events, like going and networking with people and all. One thing, like in one of those like early days when I started to read like non-technical stuff, one of the very first books I read, this was like, I guess the book was like brand new, like by Jim Collins, called Good to Great. So I got the book as a gift, and I said, and I started to read, and I couldn't drop. They talk about like the companies which has done really well. Like, I don't remember the exact time, but they were using like 25 or 30 plus years period, like sustained growth and sustained success. And they're looking at their leader. And there was this notion called level 5 leadership. And that was quite eye-opening to me. And I realized that some of the best leaders are actually not fitting into that template at all. So if you read their personality and you read their background, you just say that, you know what, you better become an architect and we lock you down in a room and then you do like all the great stuff. So we'll bring you food. So, but actually they did great. So they did an awesome job in growing their company and taking care of their people. That was like quite eye-opening to me. And I realized that, you know what, all these personality traits I have may not necessarily be a disadvantage. Maybe some of them could be an advantage. So actually, I can tell you very explicitly that like the more introversion or like the more introvert type of personality helped me a great deal in connecting people one-on-one. One thing that I never liked, so if your teams are doing this, like please don't get offended. I remember in my first couple of years, we were working on Windows 2000, and we had this like weekly team meeting. You go in a room, there's a manager, and there are like 12 people around the table. And the format is you go in, little chit chat, and then depending on the mood, the manager says, like starting from my left or right, clockwise, counterclockwise, tell me what we have done this week, and what are you planning to do next week? So some status. And the message was, we do this so that everybody knows what else other people are doing. I hated this. So I try not to sit next to him so that I'm not going to be the first one if he picks left or right. I try to sit like somewhere in the middle so I see like three people going first. And what I realized is most of the time in that meeting, until like actually almost the entire time until it's my turn, I was just working on what I'm going to say. I was not listening anything at all. I was just shutting down and connection to the server lost. And like, I just like work on what I'm going to say. And when I'm done, if I feel that I did a good job, I enjoy that success, quote unquote success. If I screwed up, I just like beat myself for the rest of the meeting. Why did I say that? Why didn't I say that? And after doing this like n many times, it was every week, I said, you know what, when I become a manager or a leader one day, I will never do this. And I kept my promise, I never do that. I never go in a room and ask people to go around the room and tell me what's going on. The reason for that is because there are much better ways to do that. And that's the reason I use my one-on-ones, and my one-on-ones are not status meetings either, but people may choose to talk about the input. The whole idea is like, if you are not that cliche person who is all out and about, don't think that like you cannot be a manager or a leader. It's not about that. You have to find out the one thing that's very critical is if you are observant, are you watching what's happening around you? Like, for example, if you are in a meeting room, if your radar and all of your radars are fully open, how many things you are seeing? Like gesture, body language, face movement, rolling eyes, like eyebrows move, all of them. If you can read an environment, watch out, you can be a good manager because you are actually seeing much more than a normal person may pay attention. The other thing is you have to watch out if you can see patterns. This is like more of on the technical term, like pattern recognition. If you can see the pattern, you can actually simplify everything. So because management and leadership at the top level is a lot about simplification, because you cannot go in front of your people and tell like a lot of complex stuff and expect them to like digest and take them in. So it's your job to make sure that you make it super simple that everybody can understand. And if people are not understanding, like, you actually lost from the get-go. So just make sure that you see those patterns, simplify things, and give back to people. And one tool that I use extensively is the easiest thing for people to understand or grasp, like, what is being shared, is taking advantage of analogies and metaphors. So if, and you can only develop that if you are observing and if you are reading. So if you read a lot or enough, or if you observe, you can see a pattern, convert that something to much familiar, and explain that through that familiar metaphor. So it's gonna be much simpler, and people love it. So what I suggest people is just find out, forget about personality. Personality is not really critical for becoming a leader. It's more about, like, being able to observe, read, self-aware, and see the patterns and simplify and give it to others. Because at the end of the day, leadership or management is also about being a teacher. So actually, under the hood, you are a teacher. So one advantage I have is I spent teaching about 8 years, both in college and privately. So that teaching experience actually helped me a lot, because at the end of the day, every time I go in front of my team, I feel like I'm teaching them something, and I ask them, like, if they understood or not.
Well, that was an incredible answer. So much to unpack there. The one thing that stood out to me was the story of the round table and you sitting away from that, because I, speaking of empathy, empathize with that wholeheartedly. I had a leader that did that to me years ago, and I would sit there and just be in a panic attack. And again, it ruined the whole week either way. Totally understand.
And
the one thing I'll say about that is knowing what you don't want to be in a leader or manager or whomever is sometimes more powerful than what you do want to be. So yeah. I love that you took that and said, throw that out.
Yeah.
Speaking of the do's and don'ts, I'm really curious, is there a specific nuance that leaders need to understand when it comes to managing software engineers, as opposed to maybe people who are more infrastructure centric?
Actually, yes. I consider myself lucky, because in my current organization, I have great variety. So I have the infrastructure team, I have data center engineering team, I have hardcore engineering team, and I do have product managers, program managers, all the disciplines in the entire organization. And I used to have them before as well, and I learned a great deal from the people who I did not have a chance to practice their job myself. This brings back, like, a memory from, like, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I read this book called Reinventing Organizations. And it's a great book. And I tell people that if you don't want to read, like, just a quick tip, there is a great chance that that person was a guest in a podcast talking about his or her book, or there is a YouTube video that they talked about the book. Go find that instead of, like, reading the whole thing. So, but this book was talking about, like, the evolution of the organizations. And the way it describes, it's a visual, like, I did spend, like, an hour, like, to create the visual myself on PowerPoint for my presentation. So, but I try to explain, like, it starts with, like, the inner circle is, like, the organizations that are more, they call them wolf packs. They run like a military, actually not military, before that. This is, the wolf packs are like gangs and mafia, that kind of organization. There's a person, there's high power, there's also gun involved, so you have to do it. There is that kind of organizations. The next level is military. There is order, but there are rules as well. It's not like no rules, like, it's not like a wolf pack, but there is high degree of structure. And there's command and control. And then, like, the next degree is, like, these are, like, all associated with colors to make them memorable. I'm just giving the summary of it. The next level is where you have high degree of competition among people, and the goal is to drive revenue and innovation. So actually, that's the Microsoft I joined in the late 90s. The next level is, I would say, this is more like what I've been experiencing at VMware. This is more like value-driven, people-centric organizations. The pinnacle level, according to book, is the organizations with no managers. You might have heard the term holacracy. There are some companies experimenting that. Zappos was one of them. And it has like different forms. It doesn't mean that no manager at all, but like extremely flat. I did share this with my team in one of the meetings. So again, maybe it was my teacher muscle. I just read it. I loved it. And I shared it with them. And I said, which one are we as a group? Forget VMware. And I was just naively thinking that like, oh, we are going to pick a color and we are going to say, oh, we are this like a value-driven organization. Actually, everybody said something else. And the reason is like, that was like a great moment for me. Like the person who is leading the data center team, he said, I need to be somewhere between Army and Wolfpack, because when I go to data center, I need those people who are obsessed, like who has like OCD when it comes to cabling, racking, and all the color code cables should come in a certain way. Labels should be at like all 45 degrees. So if you're not going to do that, I will just unplug it and ask you to do redo it. I said, you know what? You're right. It's not that he's not treating his people well. His expectation is different. And then when I talked to the infra team, they were like not as strict, but they were still strict. But when you go further up to like engineering, there is like more flexibility. But does that mean that it is a good thing? Partially, yes, because the thing is, I have written code like nights, and like there were times that like I was just staying up for the entire night because of the projects. Like these are like in the college when I was doing my master's and PhD. So I love writing code, and I love getting, even like it may sound weird, but I sometimes love getting stuck and just stopping everything, getting out, walking, grabbing like coffee or tea and coming back, and on my way back, finding the solution and end up running back to my table. With that feeling, you know that there is a creative element in writing code or being a great developer. It is not just typing and converting a problem into lines of code. There is a creative element. And if you are going to miss that creative element, you are going to end up like creating something that's no different than stuff that you end up manufacturing. The other way to see this is like, look at the hardware and software companies. So the way they operate, and the ones who like to become a software company, they struggle. That doesn't mean that they are not a good company, they don't have good engineers. They do. The task itself is different. So one thing that I read in one of the books, and I have like I also ended up creating a slide for that, is many of the manufacturing or like straightforward coding activities, those projects look like Burj Khalifa in Dubai. Straight, rectangles, very deterministic. And that project finished like about like 2 weeks or a month before the planned time. But the complex, like distributed systems type projects look like Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, because it has a lot of curves, no straight lines. And guess what? Requirements keep changing. And I found this quote, like I really loved it. The architect says, the architect says, my customer is God and he has no time restriction. So I'm taking my time. So software projects, like unfortunately, we don't have like that much time, but you should always keep in mind that the estimation is art, but not a science. And it is really hard to hit that estimation. Because of that, you have to find a way to understand the whole mental model of a developer. And for example, sometimes I remember at Microsoft, like there were a group of developers who were coming to work right at the lunchtime, and they were driving to the garage, directly going to cafeteria. Again, like naive me as an engineer, I was thinking that like, oh, I'm doing more. But the reality is everybody has a different timing. So I don't even know what those people are doing. Apparently they were staying late. They had a different cadence. So their body clock is adjusted in a way that like they feel comfortable that way. And you know what? As a leader and a manager, you should leave them alone. You cannot tell them, like, change your timings, so this is not helping us at all. No, this is art and science combined together. You have to make sure that you never miss the art element of it. Otherwise, your products are going to look like they are manufactured like IKEA furniture, not some creative, nice furniture.
Wow, that was great. I completely agree with the time bound thing, because I'm up at 12:30 a.m. doing whatever, just because I'm active right then. And that's when my creativity flows. So yeah, you can't stifle that. You just really can't. So I love that you believe that strongly. So you certainly answered a piece of this in the last question, a piece of this question in your last answer. But we have heard that you can't learn about leadership until you're in the seat. What are some of the unknowns that you've found that you can share?
Again, like you said, like some of it I mentioned, but like I don't see any problem rehashing them. I mean, of course, like one element was like when I was sharing my story in late high school years. If you are a leader, you are in more people business than technology. I still find it like hard to accept, but maybe because of my age. But the book that came out late 80s called People Wear. The reason I like the book is also like we are VMware, we are in the software business, and there you go, like you have the book called People Wear. So I have multiple copies of the book. So the second edition was released like late 90s. And that book is the type of the book that you should, if you are a leader or a manager early in your career, just open a random page and read like one page, close it, and there will be lots of gems. And one thing that I saw there was like, if you are a manager or a leader, you are in people business, and when you are trying to change things, the reaction at the surface level may look like technical, but it's going to be 99%+ emotion. Because of my job, like, we always discuss like what tool or what framework to use. And you both know that when you are in a room with 10 engineers, there are at least 10 ideas. So, tools that are supported. In early years, I used to think that like, okay, maybe that tool has this better, that better. And by the age, you see that actually, you know what, like tool is a tool. So it's not that like that tool has a feature, because other one has something else, the other tool doesn't have. So with that, you realize that people are actually attached because of simple things. Like maybe it's the UI, maybe it's the color palette. It could be anything. So because at the end of the day, like I feel like when you get your first car, no matter how old the car is, usually end up getting a second and third hand car. You love your car, like, and you clean it and you polish it and everything. After a few months, you don't care. You slam the door. So same goes with the tools. Like even if you get like I don't think if someone gets like a Porsche or Ferrari, like after like 6 months, they enter the car the same way they enter the first few months. So because the tools are same. After you get used to, it is just there for a purpose. Car is the same thing. It's a tool. It's taking you from one place to another. You like it to be nice, great, shiny, fast. But after a point, it becomes like just a commodity. With that, like one of my charter is to make sure that as VMware, we have a tool set that is unified, so we don't spend time combining like these outcomes from different tools that are serving the same purpose. And for that, I see that like people have their own ideas and like they openly share and they fight for that. So going back to the actual question and my answer, the people there and what I learned about like being in the people business and being aware that everything is more emotional than technical. So what I learned is, you know what, like I have to actually go find a way to study psychology. I did not know about that, because I remember I was telling this to somebody, like where I'm coming from, like we have a very rigid university application process. You get in a test, like millions of kids, literally, and you make some selections, and based on like the score you get, like just think that the SAT in steroids. And then based on your score, you make some selections. They say, you know what, we are going to this college, we're going to study this. Done. So you have to go do that. And I was feeling really bad for a couple of my friends. One ended up going to sociology, the other went to psychology. I was seeing them in the college campus and I was thinking, wow, what are they going to do? And like, because you are very much like financial centric and you are thinking of what their job they're going to do. But When I became a leader, I said, wow, if they were around, I have so much to ask them. I want to know, like, what is going on in people's mind, like how brain works, how people behave, like the reaction, like emotions and all those things. One person. And then I want to know, like, the group. Like, some groups are, some teams are, like, moving in certain direction with certain behavior. The other ones are different because they have different identities and they develop their own lore. The lores are different. So that brings you sociology. And then you have your large organization, you have this full culture. I want to go back and read anthropology. So what it's like, at this point, I don't have that time. And like what I realized is there is so much in our work that requires a lot of knowledge in social sciences. And the way to close that gap is just stay as a learner, learn as much as you can. And like I said, we are living in an era that I used to call audiobook cheating. So I am a proud cheater for the last couple of years. So initially I was thinking that like I'm not gonna do that. I need to underline and all. But guess what? Like like anything else, it's all about adaptability. Now I'm an avid audiobook listener. And same with podcasts. Actually, interesting thing is when I suggest it to people, they say, oh, you know what? I wander a lot. When I walk and listen, I realize that like, it's been 5 minutes and I never heard anything from this. I say, same happened to me when I read the book on paper. I go back, and actually going back is a verb. This one, just move the slide a few minutes, re-listen. So wandering is very human. And when you recognize, just take it back, rewind, listen again. So if you use all these tools, actually closing the gap is much easier than it was like 20, 25 years ago.
I love it. And proud audiobook supporter here. That's how I prefer to consume them these days. And I'm with you on being able to just rewind a little bit and re-listen.
Yep.
Well, I have to say thank you so much, Hussein, for joining us and sharing your knowledge with the community. And hopefully those that are listening will take some time to fill those gaps.
Thanks for joining us on the Inspirational Leadership Podcast brought to you by VMUG. We hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to nominate a leader to be on the show, please tweet out to @myVMUG. Until next time, may you not be afraid to take the lead.